Oh, Mercy. That sounds like the name of a novel. Alan Brenman. Alan, can you hear me? What's weird? This is our study hall.
Okay.
No, I mean, it is.
It really is. Literally. It was moved out of the rabbi's study.
Because the social hall just doesn't feel intimate enough to me. Okay. This feels a little more clandestine.
It's like we're doing some secret thing in the days of the like Muranos.
Or mission or something.
Mm-hmm. If we've formally met Mercy, I'm Sally.
Hi, Sally.
I'm Mercy. Who's that?
I should welcome people.
We can open this.
Yeah, we can open the curtain, I guess.
Oh, thanks. Hi, welcome. Hi, I'm Barry. So nice to meet you. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, really nice to have me.
Please come to our secret lair here.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Oh my gosh. Hi.
Do you know each other?
Yeah.
Based on
that?
Hi. We went on a mission to Israel together a bazillion years ago.
Oh my gosh.
Were you married?
Was that the family mission of the Alexanders?
No, it's just you were staffing a...
Which mission?
We were staffing a mission with Dee Dee Whitman. I don't even remember. It was a young leader's mission.
Gosh.
I'd forgotten that Dee Dee was
that
even on that thing.
That is going back so far.
But you know what the weird thing is? I was speaking to Sue Froelich. She said, all my really good friends came from that mission.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
And a lot of the leadership in the community did.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That was a full-on lifetime ago.
Yes.
I do think I was married.
I think you were married to Barney. But yeah. I don't think you guys had any good children.
No. We didn't have any kids yet. No.
Or this is for you.
Wow.
A little bit.
Are you expecting me to catch up?
No, no.
It's beautiful.
I got a notebook.
So nice.
Okay.
Wow. It's worth it just for this video.
No? Yeah, no, it's worth coming for the notebook.
Yeah, totally.
We'll start in just a few minutes. Just wait for some folks to come.
Actually, Rabbi D or Rabbi Ballinger?
Whatever you like.
Just don't leave Chris ever. You know at least one of my girls. They went on March of the Living with you.
Oh.
It's either Miriam or Rebecca. Or
Miriam.
Rebecca. Yeah.
Miriam.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. That was a fun trip.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was a very meaningful trip.
Yeah.
Parts of it were fun. Parts of it, traumatic. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, how's Miriam doing now? What's
she
up to?
She's okay. Yeah. Still finding herself. But Rebecca is married, my older daughter.
Oh, wow.
Is married.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, just got married in September.
Mazal tov.
Thank you. Yeah.
Where is she located?
They live in New Haven. Oh. Her husband is at Yale getting his PhD. Yeah.
Not too far away.
Not too far away. But they got married in Brooklyn.
Brooklyn. Karen, welcome. We have a few digital joiners. That's what I'm waiting to.
Oh, cool.
Send Karen my greetings.
Sally says hello. Oh, you're on. Are you on mute?
No.
No.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Sally. My chavruta partner has dropped out, so.
Oh, are you looking for a new chavruta partner?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Have we got a deal for you?
Yeah, this is.
We have a sale
out.
On chavruta partners.
I mean, I'm sorry that your chavruta partner has dropped out, but we have a new joinee attendee to our class, so maybe. Maybe that could be a nice match.
I'm Elisa, by the way.
Yeah, we know each other, Marcy.
Marcy, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry.
That's
out of context.
Yeah.
How you doing?
It's been a long time.
Yeah,
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
And I'm sorry.
I'm Brendan.
Hi, Brendan.
Rose.
Nice to meet you.
Chief Barrett Rose. That's how I know Brendan. He's related to T. Ferret.
I was going to do formal introductions. You all seem to be doing it.
Yes, so we took care of that.
What are you up to these days?
I'm working.
Yeah?
I run the kosher food pantry.
Oh, wow. So JCS?
Yes.
Yeah. Huh. Good for you.
I enjoy it.
So does that mean that Sue Adler is no longer, was she running it?
No, she works in the Jewish Elder Care Division.
Okay. That's right.
Yeah. What's Jeff up?
Jeff is busy. He's actually looking for a new job.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to touch that.
That's okay. That's okay.
We're all in that spot at one point or another.
Can only look at the positive.
Mm-hmm.
Everything
mm-hmm.
happens for a reason.
Right.
So we're just hoping something better. There's lots of reasons things happen and we don't know what they are all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Amen.
How do I possibly catch up?
Well,
it's really not that hard.
It's not that hard.
Except that you guys journaled, I'm sure.
I actually didn't. I actually didn't. So,
Brenda, are you journaling? I bet he is.
No, see.
And don't you feel better already?
And my Clarissa's not really journaling, so it's, you know.
Did you guys not have this?
No, I haven't gone.
I had a notebook which I gave to my son, Dave. I was busy doing this when David had his accident and he got my journal. David had a massive accident.
What happened?
David and his partner were trying to start a business in network security. And they'd been living in Belgrade for a year. And they had left Belgrade to get their residency visa renewed. And on the way back, they were rushing to get back because the woman who was driving had left her 12-year-old daughter with her grandmother and her mother. Rushing to get back, and she sped, and she was in a car accident, and his partner was killed. He was in the passenger seat in the front. The woman who was driving was seriously injured and in the ICU for a very long time, and she's now been charged for capital. She's now been charged. I mean, she was a friend of theirs. I've spoken to these two people the week before. She's now being charged for vehicular homicide in Croatia. And my son, who is in the back seat with a seatbelt on, is like 97% healed bodily.
But no.
They lost their computers and their cell phones in this accident. So he hasn't been able to recoup the business. So the business vaporized.
Irene.
I keep forgetting if it's exactly like my middle neighbor, one letter difference. He is coming back to the province of Rhode Island on Christmas Day, and he needs to look for a job. So I'm feeling your pain.
I miss us.
September 12th.
I'm so sorry.
But he's physically okay. And I did send you a message. I think you can take his name off the Misha Bear office because I'll be embarrassed. Somebody said, how is your husband? I said, no, it's not my husband. It's my son. And he's okay.
So we'll take his name off.
He's like, he's sort of okay. But once you get on this list, you never get off those lists. So I don't want people to think my husband is like seriously.
Okay, I think I'm here.
Hey, Vicky, welcome.
Thanks.
Okay, so we have, just so people know, we have Vicky, Alan, and Karen joining us.
Alan, Brett, which Vicky?
Vicky Rotkow or Temple Rotkow, and Alan Herman joining us digitally, and Karen Schiff.
Long distance.
Long distance or short distance is the case, maybe. So it's great to have everyone. I just wanted to do, since we have we have at least one new addition. So I wanted to do a name, and people seem to have done their names, but just in case, we'll go around and remind each other of names. I'm Barry, and I'm grateful that you're all here on this warm, rainy, beautiful December evening. We'll go this way.
Okay. I'm Elisa, and I'm grateful that you've opened this up to a latecomer.
Oh, of course.
I'm Sally, and I am always grateful to study new material with Rabbi Ballinger and people around the table.
I'm Brendan. I'm good to have doing something I'm grateful for.
Sorry, it's, yeah, I can hear you. I'm out.
Post-Thanksgiving.
They were saying their name, so Brendan was just saying that he's grateful that we're doing something that people are grateful for. And his name is Brendan.
And I'm Marcy, and I'm grateful for my job.
Yay!
I'm Irene, I'm grateful that I actually managed to be here today.
Yeah.
Hi.
Oh, no worries. And Adam is here as well. Adam, if you just want to share your name. Cool. So tonight's topic is Chesed. I think we'll begin with a chant or a song. We always like to enter these Vod groups by sort of coming into a more intentional space for our study. It's worth saying something about that, which is that it would be easy to just slide into study like another thing we do. But I think I'll speak for myself from my own experiences per the guidelines of the group. And my life is disjointed enough that anything feels unintentional these days for me. And so it's good to mark with specificity the idea of not just Torah study, but sort of what it means to sanctify a spiritual conversation that isn't just an intellectual exercise, but particularly one we're sort of grappling with applying in a sense. And so I'm reminded of this famous Talmud piece where the rabbi keeps going to start the lecture and one person keeps walking in, and so he keeps restarting, and then finally someone walks in and the rabbi does not restart for that person, and that person of course gets very upset and says, why didn't you restart for me? I don't remember the resolution.
How would he know that he restarted for everyone else before?
You know, there are like commentators that ask that question.
Is that supposed to be
the I'll guy? Look up the actual is text next time. Okay. There's a hop to the story I forgot. Hey, welcome, Shai. Oh, Shai is with us. Okay. So tonight's subject is Chesed, and I thought the words from the Psalms, Olam Chesed Yibaneh, that isn't just one among other attributes, but it is a primary attribute, maybe the central foundation. So the words in Hebrew mean Olam, the world. Chesed is Yibaneh, the world is built through Chesed. Leave it untranslated for the moment. We'll sing that for a bit, and then we'll enter into the teaching. Olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, vaya, vada na, vaya. Olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, vaya, vada na, vaya. Olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, na na. Olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, vaya, ya ra ra ra. Olam chesed yibaneh, na na na, vaya, ya ra ra ra.
chesed yibanem. Anana vayom yaranam. Olam chesed yibanem. Anana vayom yaranam. So we'll start by just going around the room. I'm going to work with the translation of loving kindness for the moment. Chesed, loving kindness. And just snap association. What comes to your mind? Good, the bad, the ugly, otherwise. Chesed, what is it for you in general?
Doing good for others.
Helping lift people up.
Hugs.
Sort of a feminine aspect.
Feminine.
Feminine.
Like a maternal?
Yeah, maternal, feminine, kind of soft.
Generous and patient.
Do you say generous and patient?
Part of the normal course of life or day that you do and don't take credit for.
And don't take credit for it. So we'll jump in. If you have ideas at any point, interrupt. It's not, it's okay to interrupt here. And we'll start on 85 in the packet if you're there. A volunteer to read the first.
Can I open the curtain? I can't see a thing.
Yeah, sure.
Because I'm a light and I talk. The
curtain's on the other end.
They could all squeeze.
So I'm going to open this. Is there light? Is this light on? Has this light on?
Yeah, that light seems to not be working. Do you want to switch?
That's okay. Oh, you know what? I'll just
oh, there it goes. Look at that.
Does that help?
No, I still can't see. Okay, I'll go over.
Yeah, we could. Oh, that's okay. Maybe you want to switch?
No, I'll come sit there. Space okay. I'll sit in the chair.
Oh, you sure? Okay. Volunteer to read.
According to mystical tradition, God created the world simply to bestow kindness and love on all creation. This constant flow of chesed initiated and sustains the world. We humans are also creators. This is one of the most important ways that we imitate God. What is our means of creating and building the world? We might think it is our imagination, our ability to envision something new. Musar Master Rabbi Shlomo Wolbe teaches that it is chesed. Each act of chesed builds the world.
I'm going to pause there. It's a heavy thought in that paragraph, but it is just stated. The first idea is an interesting one, that chesed, loving kindness, is what sustains the world, but more than a sort of cause, it's the like telos, or the end, the tachlit, the point of the world, is to bestow kindness. So that's a pretty big claim, something like, and this is a claim that the citation is to the Ramchal, Moshe Chaim Lutzatz, who does make this claim, that God created the world so that we might enjoy it. In other words, to be kind, to cause others to enjoy. That's a particular definition. It's a statement about why the universe was created, not how, but why, like the first order question. So I just want to open that up. Is that ringing? Obviously, it's a non-verifiable kind of claim that the universe was created for this purpose. He does say that. Yeah, he does say that. He says that it was created for hana, for enjoyment, and then he takes it one step further, actually, in his if the source is, yes, it is to Derech Hashem, so his full statement of it there, and in Da'atfunot goes something like, God created the world for people to enjoy it, and people enjoy it best when they earn their own enjoyment. So it does have a corollary to it there, which is that it's sort of like better to teach a person to fish than to give them a fish in God's version of, is that a Chinese proverb? In God's version of the, what does it mean to be kind? To be kind isn't to give someone something, but to empower people to earn on their own. And then he quotes a teaching from the Talmud Yerushalmi that says that no one enjoys, or people are embarrassed to have bread that they've been given like beggars. So this idea that one, the ultimate kindness might be to be able to make people sort of creators themselves. That's an interesting idea. So I guess I'm asking, does any of this, how is it resonating for anyone as an idea? Or not? It's just hanging.
Sounds kind of un-Jewish. I mean, create the world to enjoy it. Sounds kind of hedonistic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, maybe the corollary makes it more like the word part.
Right. So I should say, he just stayed there to be Nehenah Miziv Hashchina, to benefit from the splendor of the divine presence. But it's still created for enjoyment, just spiritual enjoyment.
Well, that's spiritual enjoyment is different.
Physical. Tempted to go get the Ramchal.
It makes me think of mindfulness, which I always attribute to like Asian, you know, yoga or Zen or something. So it's interesting for my interpretation anyway of the mindfulness to be so embedded in Jewish thought.
The mindful notion that like one would best enjoy if one were being mindfully present.
That's the empowerment piece. You could miss it if it's just being given to you. But the empowerment of seeing it and enjoying it is such a like in the moment, at least for me, kind of concept.
Karen.
Yeah, this is actually resonating quite well because I was just thinking about how to talk to my nephews who like to hang out, and I learned that they sometimes don't even like to go to their sports because they just want to hang out, and hanging out is basically doing nothing. And I've been trying to figure out what to tell them if they come up against the question, well, what am I here for anyway? I just like to do nothing. And I've been thinking that maybe I could tell them that if you're kind to people, it feels good.
Uh-huh.
In other words, yeah, we're here to do something. We can be nice to other people and kind to people, and it actually feels good. It feels better than doing nothing.
So the selfish version of kindness.
Well, I don't know if that kind of feeling good is actually selfish. I hear why you're saying that, though.
I'm playing devil's advocate.
Yeah.
I'm not calling it that. I'm asking.
Yeah, you're asking because it's trying to convince them that they should do it because they'll get some sort of pleasure principle, you know, stimulation thing going on. But I think that this kind of pleasure is not hedonism in the same way that someone was just talking about. I think it affects you in a different way.
Hmm. Okay, that prompts an interesting question. How does it affect you? I'm just going to insert the question here. How does it affect you when you are kind to others or when someone is kind to you? If anyone wants to plug that in.
It makes me feel good. It makes me happy. It has a positive effect, at least on me, in both ways, the giving and the taking.
It feels like a whole person experience, fully seen, or you fully see someone when you give it.
So what is so significant about this Mida Chesed, anyway? Who would like to read the next paragraph?
It's a very quiet group.
That's okay. I think people are digesting, chewing.
Right. What is so significant about this Midah Chesed that it builds the world? Chesed is commonly understood to mean giving to others. Chesed means providing meals to parents of newborns, visiting the sick, and other similar activities usually organized by our communal Chesed committees. Gemilut Chesedim, the term often used in the rabbinic tradition, means using one's life energy to help or give to another. Maimonides calls this type of giving chesed shebegufo, chesed done with the self. The rabbis of the Talmud claim that chesed is greater than tzedakah and mishpat because it can be done with oneself and not just with one's money, and with anyone, not just the poor. Chesed is on the short list of mitzvot that the Mishnah teaches have no minimum amount. There is no barrier to entry with chesed. Any kind of kindness, no matter how small, is good. Rabbi Wolbe includes in his chesed practices smiling warmly, judging others favorably, and bearing another burdens with him or her. These are actions that weave the fabric of a community. Chesed puts us in a regular, intimate contact with those around us. In all these ways, chesed builds the world.
So just one interesting note about chesed here. Fundamentally, it is interacting with someone else. It's a kind of intervention is maybe a strong word, but it is really like leaving yourself and getting involved in someone else's life and really seeing a person or being seen by someone, as people have mentioned, in the idealized form of it. So it's kind of an interesting thing here because we're focusing on chesed as like individuals trying to be kinder, but there's like this basic notion, right, that chesed at the root is about acknowledging our communal reality, a sense that it builds the world because it builds interactions, right? Not just our own individual world, but a collective world. That's an important piece of this, I think, and I'm going to name this piece that in a lot of modern spiritual practices, be it Eastern practices or Musar practices, one could easily mistake the direction and have it turn into a sort of egoistic, narcissistic kind of thing, not because people are that, but just because the focus in our society on self-improvement is starting with self has like a very heavy capital S self. And of course, that's part of it, right, is that we're all individuals trying to improve our, because I can't improve how you behave, maybe subliminally or in implicit ways, or as a friend I can, but fundamentally, we can only control ourselves, which is important. But this practice, I think, gets to that paradigm most strongly, where we are acting. Here is Chesed Shebegufo, right? Maimonides highlighting that it's not even something you're doing with an object. You're doing Chesed. It transforms the person that does it. And
end, it's about building connections, or at the biggest level. Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask a question? Can you hear me? I don't think you can't. Can you see me?
We can't see you, but we can hear you loudly and clearly.
Okay. So could you talk a little bit about what it means from a Jewish perspective to build the world? For me, I know that, you know, maybe that's, I mean, I'm guessing it's involved, it has to do with mitzvot or some sort of eternal impact we have, but what does it mean to really build the world? If that's the point of chesed.
Anyone want to take that?
Good question, though.
That's a good question. What do we mean, build the world? Olam chesed yivaneh, the world is built for. What does it mean to build the world?
I mean, I was thinking about it as the the inverse, like the lack of chesed destroys the world. And I think you can see that really clearly in a lot of ways. I mean, now and forever, probably, but. So it's almost like proves it true by the opposite.
This is a good question. What do we mean by build the world? I always assume that in a Jewish context, we mean what we mean in every other Jewish world, which is probably a lot of different things depending on who you ask. It's true for any Jewish thing, right? But in maybe a classical version of versions, I can imagine something like Bereishit in the beginning, where there's a vision of Milua ta'aretz, of filling the world, of pru or vu milua ta'aretz, this notion of spreading out and filling the world. We've kind of done that pretty well. The world is populated sufficiently, according to most population control experts. It's way overpopulated. But in a messianic sense, maybe if you want to take like the sort of where that goes rabbinically, or even like Yitz Greenberg would say, right, it's about partnering with God in building the world. So to contrast, right, it's not a Native American practice. And if you were a Native American, it's also not one Native American practice, but your religion might be something more like just being in harmony with the patterns that exist and sort of paying homage to them. Whereas this has more agency for the role of people in the development of history as a theological practice. I'm trying to answer your question a little bit by contrast, if that's helpful. In that to say, I think there's a clear progress to the Jewish notion of history, be it the mystical notion. There's a famous Kabbalistic teaching that the world has 7,000 years, and they correspond to the days of Bereishit. And so there are the years of Tohu and Bohu, and now we're sort of near the end of that, according to, if you follow like the Jewish, you know, we're in the late 5000s, sort of the, after you get to 6000, you're in Shabbat, in this period of rest. So a notion of like, so I would say it means something like improvement. Actually, building the world would mean something like refinement, improvement, or moral or ethical development. Could mean that. Suppose it could mean technological development. I don't know if that's a Jewish. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
Like the messianic idea, or tikkun ha'olam, the way that the rabbis used the word originally, tends to be like making legal enactments to make a more just world. And the messianic idea is redeeming the world. So that's like an extreme version of it. Of peace on earth. So like building the world would be creating a just, yeah, so in all of these versions then, I'm sorry, I'm speaking out loud in muddled form to get to your question, because I don't know the answer, but I think it means building a more just world, but mm-hmm. building. Okay, now we'll move into the Kabbalah for a second, because Rabbi Jaffe goes there. And so people may be familiar with these Kabbalistic spherot or not. If you're not, basically
this is sort of a different theological system. It basically is the idea that God emanates as opposed to create. So it has creation occur through emanation as sort of a process of expanding gradually outward into creation. And there are these triads of principles that balance. So they're like, so there's chesed, there's loving kindness. And in the Zohar, every is the most best version of it. Every good attribute or emanation of God has like its twin in the Sitra Achra in the dark side, as its evil twin, but an actual evil twin that becomes a full person in the Zohar, which is really exciting to like, and like to meet those characters in their full evilness. So the loving side, so I always, when I approach this practice, I reading these, I always ask myself, what's the dark side of this mita? That's where I go, because it's who I am. But, so I mean, maybe that's, so the balance of it is gevura. So it has its balance, right? It's counterweight, maybe that's the right word, is discipline, boundary, introspection, right? Which would be the opposite of reaching out and of kindness, be a sort of more quiet, strong, perhaps less loving, harsher, introspective take. So if chesed is a loving, outgoing expression, this is a strong internal expression. But what's the dark side of chesed as opposed to the counterweight? What's like if it went to the extreme?
Isolation?
Isolation? Say more.
Separating yourself from others, from community, from...
Oh, that would be like the opposite of chesed.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I thought you asked.
Oh, so that's an interesting question. I'm asking, what's the, not the opposite of it, but like, if it got taken so far, it became bad. Huh. Like, what would too much of a good thing look like for chesed?
Helicopter parenting.
Helicopter parenting.
Smothering.
Or people who give too much of themselves and don't sort of protect themselves.
Right.
Or people who are looking for acknowledgement for their acts of loving kindness.
Uh-huh. Why don't you recognize my great charity?
Right.
Has anyone ever been the victim of chesed?
Yes.
Right? So.
Yes.
Yes. We've all, many of us, I've certainly been a victim of charity and loving kindness. Brendan, you were saying no?
It's hard for me to see. Like that, it feels like it's then the other thing that's the problem. It's the need for recognition that's the problem, not the loving. Like it feels like loving kindness is like so benign. Like there can't be a bad version of it. Like,
well, I think that
it's the other thing that's being delivered with it that's the problem.
Well, I think if you
overbearingness or whatever it is, it's.
I think if you give so much, or you give and it's not appreciated, or it's taken advantage of, then that could be what the rabbis say.
Right, but it's not the loving kindness that's the problem there. It's the taking advantage of that's the problem. Mm-hmm. I guess I have a hard time seeing how loving kindness could ever somehow manifest itself in a... Like without it being another factor that's
kind of spoiling. I hear what you're saying.
It's the in itself. I don't think it ever be too much.
Like Hillel says, "Do not do unto others as you would not have others do unto you." But in the New Testament, it said, "Do unto others as you would have others." It's like it's like you can have an idea instead of really thinking that. You're really putting yourself in that other person's place. You just impose your feeling of lovingness on other people without considering what's the best for them.
But then it becomes a burden.
Right.
And it becomes abuse. I love you so much, I'm going to do what I want to do.
But the person who's doing it thinks that they're being loving.
Crosses the line.
Right, so that's where you need the dean
So chesed may also be understood in contrast to its opposing meaning in the Kabbalistic mystical system of gevura, discipline, boundaries. Chesed refers to a flow of loving kindness that breaks through boundaries, external or self-imposed. On their own, these and all midot can have extreme manifestations that are not always positive. Tradition teaches that God, or Brendan's objection noted, traditionally, tradition teaches that God originally intended to create the world only with the midah of din, or gevura, but realized it couldn't be sustained, so then added chesed. Just as too much gevura, boundaries, can lead to rigidity, when unmodified by boundaries, chesed can leave one feeling used and depleted, and the recipients of such chesed feeling smothered or unseen. We all probably know people who practice unbalanced chesed. Perhaps we've experienced it ourselves. This is why we refer to God in the standing silent prayer, the Amidah, as Gomel Chesedim Tovim, one who bestows good loving kindness. It is possible to have bad chesed. I'm citing their Alan Marinus in a lecture at the Musser Institute. So let's, whether that's intrinsic to the loving kindness or not is a side point, right? One, the basic point is easily the practice of trying to be kinder could fall out of balance itself. Especially as it relates to people we don't know, right? It's not always intentional, right? People are different. And because people are different, people have different expectations about privacy versus help, about forwardness versus not assuming things. And so, and it's complicated. I'll give a painful example. A couple of years ago, there was someone who I performed their wedding. And then I got together to meet up with them a couple of weeks after their wedding to see how they were doing. And they had a couple of bruises on their face. And I asked what happened. And they said, I fell down the steps. But it sounded to me like the kind of thing that someone says. It just felt like one of those domestic abuse situations. And I went home at night and was watching Law & Order SVU. It was Wednesday night. And lo and behold, it was the same kind of case as it often is. And I said, no, that is what's going on here. And I made maybe a rookie mistake of emailing the person and saying, you know, if something's wrong, you can tell me, we'll get you the help they need. And they called me from a payphone. This is the year 2017 when this happened. Saying, don't you ever email me like that again. My husband seized my email account and beat the hell out of me. And I felt horrible. And it's hard. So why am I bringing that story?
So you were right.
Well, I was right, but I got the woman in beaten. Trouble, right. I mean, not to say that her husband beat her. And she's since escaped that. Well, she's still married, but she's not living with him. She's in a safe place. So things are better now. But the instinct to want to help in that case, even well-meaning and not smothering, was probably a little foolhardy. Like, I probably should have consulted a mental health worker first and asked, is it safe to contact this person? It didn't even occur to me. It was an innocent mistake, but it was a mistake, I think. I bet if I would have consulted one of the mental health professionals in this room, you might have cautioned me about the way in which I might contact the person or that it could result in harm that I didn't foresee. I bet someone would have told me that. But I didn't. And so why am I bringing that up? It's an example of how chesed can go wrong in real life, not because people are, but real life is complicated.
Or corollary to that. When parents say, I have to hit you, you're good. I love you. That's why I'm hitting you. Or husbands, wives, whatever. They'll say, this is good for you. I'm doing this out of goodness.
Definition of like spare the rod, spoil the child. Yeah. People are self-professing a motivation of kindness.
Right. They believe it. Sir.
So who how do we practice a chesed that balances giving with boundaries so that it actually builds the world? Noting Victoria's point that what does it mean to build the world? So in a Jewish sense, that might, I think that probably means in the Torah sense, building a more just society, ultimately a messianic society. Would anyone like to read that paragraph? Do we practice?
How do we practice the chesed that balances giving the boundaries so that it actually builds the world? Ravolvi points us to one of the Torah's most powerful passages by giving. If, however, there is a needy person among you, one of your kinsmen in any of your settlements in the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not harden your heart and shut your hand against your needy kinsmen. Rather, you must open your hand and lend him sufficient for whatever he needs. The Torah calls on us to really see what the other needs as a first step before acting on the impulse to give. Often we only see our own needs projected onto the other when we want to give. A well-known example from international aid circles is the case of a well-meaning young man who wanted to help poor African children. He started a nonprofit organization to collect and donate t-shirts. The assumption was that everyone in the U.S. has extra t-shirts and people in Africa lack clothes, so let's donate our t-shirts. After a huge number of t-shirts were collected and shipped to Africa, the international aid community prevailed on him to stop because people did not need the shirts in the place he sent them. His fake t-shirts also endangered the fragile local economy by undermining demand for locally produced clothing. This type of unbound harmful effort could be prevented by practicing sublimated forbearance and making the effort to truly see and hear what the other needs. Then we can target our chesed where and how it is really needed.
So this brings us back to the mindful practice of midot and the interaction of some of our attributes with others. Like here, there's a multiplication of chesed and sablanut as a sort of combination. But that's worth paying extra attention to, that it could be that a key component of chesed in particular is a sort of restful quality or patience that allows enough reflection to double check, or in this case, it's see what the other needs. But I would add, you know, based on this and many, many similar stories of, you know, well-intentioned but quickly done good that isn't so good, the pause is always like a helpful quality, or patience in this way.
Good question.
Yeah, always.
Does the term chesed like imply action? It seems like to me that's where I'm getting a little like.
Oh, is it like a feeling you cultivate, or is it a thing you do? That's what you're asking?
Well, I feel like there's an act of chesed, and then there's a chesed, which is just like, and I think that's for me where I'm like, it's in the action that we're taking in the spirit of chesed that maybe then like, far or something, but is chesed itself like implying an action?
Ah.
Or is it a state?
The question for the table is chesed like a state of being, or is it just an action?
That's a good one. What do you guys, what's a state of being?
Yeah.
Like peace. You can try to achieve peace, but peace is like a state of being, right? I guess I would say like so something like that. I mean like you can act lovingly towards someone, but being loving isn't to me an action. It's like a state of it's like a way that you are in the world, like a presence or a attitude.
No, because it can be without an object. Because it has to have an object. If you're loving towards somebody, you're showing them some loving act.
Doing something for somebody else.
Otherwise, it's not present. You're just feeling it, but you're not doing it.
Or could it be the other way, that if you're not really feeling it, like that the real chesed done well comes from an expression of like a cultivated state of...
Well, I'm going with that. I can't think of the prayer, chen v'chesed v'rachamim. They're all qualities of being that when you do them well, they infuse all the things that you do, but they come first. Like, am I getting that?
But you can do it after chesed without starting feeling particularly generous.
You can, but if you really are
right,
if you're in the chesed state, if you're in a state of pain, the chesed and rachamim or something,
right? But it's still chesed.
So this is like interesting. Which way does it work? Do you learn to see people by being kind? Obviously, it's going to be both and neither to some extent, right? But for you, not like. That's always the challenge in Jewish learning spaces, is to make it about like your actual experience as opposed to like the theoretical possibilities of how this might work. But how does it work well for you is what I'm saying. Is it that you take the time to sign up to do something kind for someone, and then in the act of having to do that, you have to consider, oh, I'm making a meal for this person who's ill. As I'm cooking dinner for them, I'm wondering, right, I signed up because I felt like, oh, my name's not going to be on the list. They're going to judge me. Lazy person, like, isn't cooking for six so-and-so, right? Maybe. Let's just say you've ever had that feeling. And maybe that's not the only motivation. You also want to be a nice person and that, but that wouldn't be enough to get you to sign up. But the fact that it's a public list and your name will be there or not causes you to want to be seen in some measure. And then in cooking dinner for this person, you start to think about, like, what are they going through with this illness? And you feel bad for them, and maybe your heart breaks for them, and maybe you take actions afterward. So is it that the action causes the state, or is it the state causes, like, how does it work for you? And could it be that sometimes you have the state of caring about people, but it doesn't get actualized in any way, right? That happens all the time to me, or I think warm thoughts about people. And then I say I should really reach out to them, but then I'm busy and I don't. Right? So is that chesed? I felt lovingly towards them. Next time I see them, I still feel warmly because I've thought nice things. Anyone? Or even a time where it worked one way or the other for you, where you did an act of chesed and it caused you to sort of feel love to a person, or because you felt that way, you decided to do something for someone, or were they for you?
So I remembered this constant flow of chesed. And to me, I think it is that back and forth that actually is maybe the purest form of chesed. I don't think it's either or. Mm-hmm. I think it's meant to be interactive, isn't the right word, but a constant flow.
Dynamic.
Mm.
I think it makes it a lot easier if you're feeling the feeling of chesed when you're doing the action. I mean, it's different when it's your job, but like sometimes as a therapist, you're not feeling it. Like, <you're,
laughs> don't tell me that.
but you need kind of give and take.
Well, no, like, you know, you're having a bad day and you have a client that you don't quite connect with or like feel that warm towards. And so you kind of have to put it on a little bit and like there's a quality that's missing from that I think even if the action and the words you say or whatever are the same, that it comes across differently. So I don't know how to translate that into like the everyday, because I think that's a sort of special case, but I think it is important to have that the feeling behind it, the actual loving kindness behind it in combination with the action for it to really hit. I don't know if that made sense.
But does it have to be first? Does it have to motivate the action, or can it be experienced as a result of the action? That's I was really struck by that. That I'm not sure it is either or. And in building the world, like, you know, you put a brick on top and then you see along the way that a brick, you know, needs to, I don't know, I'm not saying this right, but like the physical building and the emotional spiritual building, I don't know, I'm trying to find that analogy. And I just think it's meant to be fluid. At least it feels that way to me.
My sister, who's into neuropsychology, whatever, says that if you're smiling, you can't feel. If you're smiling, you can't frown or something. You have to be creative. Just by putting the smile on your face, it makes your brain feel happier.
Right.
So maybe Chesed is just saying, you know, you put the smile on your face and you interact with the world in a loving kind, in this kind of way. Does that make sense?
I mean, that's where I feel like that's what I'm with it around it not necessarily being an action. I guess because I feel like there's, well, maybe there's like, for me, there's maybe just things that I decide to do in my day-to-day that hopefully are chesed, because they're just like, I would fix somebody's thing if they had, it was a broken thing. But I don't think of it as like being loving kindness towards them. It's just like, I have skills to fix the broken thing and they need it fixed.
What about
that? And so maybe that they experience it as chesed, but for me, that's not inhabiting it. There's this other, but there's other times.
But do you choose when to spend your time doing that versus something else for yourself or something else?
But I guess there's distinct times when I actually am cultivating that space of like loving kindness. That's about that, like having that smile on my face. It's not just like, it's like deeply, like I'm feeling deeply like happy and loving towards the world. And in that space, I don't necessarily have to do anything for anybody. Like,
but if you have that feeling and you have a beautiful smile on your face and no one sees it,
or maybe they do.
But if they do, then they're going to get something
from it. Right, but it's not like it has to be an act that I'm trying to improve their life. I'm not intentionally giving that to them, which I guess that's the part of, that I feel like is the part about the intentionality of it.
Have to be an intention on your part. Maybe the fact that you're just doing it is making you happy, and that could be chesed.
Do you think there's a continuum of chesed? So like you can be doing chesed at 1, at 3, at 8, and at 10.
Well, big 10. Mm-hmm.
So like maybe it's not either or, black and white.
Right, so I guess another way of saying it would be, I just want to say it's really interesting. I smiled to test this, and I guess I made a big smile, and the thing took a picture of me. The algorithm has taken a picture and emailed me the picture of Zoom. So I don't know what that means, this whole thing. But that just like brought me to a whole other place. I'm sorry. I'm like, whoa, what does smiling do?
It's just to make a picture and send it to you.
You smiled. You must be posing. And I was just trying to test this principle. I think, you know, the butterfly effect is, since we're mentioning neuroscience, we go to other things, right? Which is this kind of basic notion that everything has a ripple effect on every other thing that occurs, right? Or in the butterfly version, if a butterfly flaps its wings, it will interact with the air molecules around it, which will interact with the air molecules around that, which will eventually, you know, be a cause of some part of a hurricane, which will then trigger a flood, which will kill someone, right? In other words, that there's sort of an ongoing dynamic of interaction that we tend to think about things as predictable events and the big picture, but sort of lose the intimate interactions between like molecules in the sense or cells. But probably there's something about chesed in that, right? Like the air we're breathing now was produced by a tree. Was that an intentional act of loving kindness? Maybe. I don't know that we understand the degree to which trees can intend, right? And did something create that tree intentionally or not, right? Like perhaps squirrels decompose to fuel the tree. So there is a sense of chesed being built in to the nature of how we interact with each other. Let's take this back to the continuum. And then this other thing, which we're, I think, floating with, I'm just monitoring the conversation like a referee, which is, to what extent is intentionality important in that piece, right? Like there's a sense in which we're all interacting with each other. And if you follow the rules of the road in Rhode Island and go in the right order at a stop sign, that's probably an oddly intentional act of kindness as opposed to making it up each time that everyone, I mean, the person on the right is supposed to have the right of way, and it's a kinder system. But I mean, that's an example. Do you have to intend the kindness and really work up to an emotional state? So I think that can be really loving, right? To do it in that way. But it could be that doing something in that way also runs the risk of being more fraught. Like, maybe, can I give a personal, I'll give a personal story. I call this the eggplant parmesan story. I'm not going to name who the person was. Hopefully they're not listening. I think we're on good terms now. There was someone I was visiting. I hadn't seen them for a while. And I was going to visit. And they don't keep kosher, but they worked to make their oven kosher so that I'd be able to eat. And they went fairly good distance, a 50-minute drive to another supermarket to get kosher cheese to make what they felt was the world's best eggplant parmesan there. Eggplant parmesan, and they're going to make it for me, which was really good. I love eggplant parmesan, and so I was excited about this, but I became ill, and I had to delay the road trip, and I missed the eggplant parmesan. They were really upset about the effort they had extended to cook this eggplant parmesan, taking off early from work to go to a supermarket an hour away and back, koshering the oven and following these instructions to make eggplant parmesan. And here I was and had the flu from their perspective. Yeah, right, or whatever, right? Sure you do. And they were not happy. They were really upset. So I experienced that as, right, like, because there was extra effort and intentionality into the chesed, I think I'm a little bit of introspection would have canceled some of that, right? But there is that danger, I think, like the more we invest in kind of overdoing, yeah.
That's not really
fast,
but they just.
Right. So maybe it was more about their eggplant parmesan.
Yeah, but them. I mean, they were so invested in showing you how good of a parmesan they can make, then.
It's a little bit of a mashal, but I do think it's real that the more we invest in doing chesed for someone, there's a sense in which our egos get caught up in that. It's almost impossible not to. And then there can be more expectations on the receiver of chesed, which might be counterproductive. I don't know.
And it feels, like, yeah. It didn't feel like hospitality.
No, like the hospitable response would be like, I'm so sorry you're sick. I hope you feel better soon.
More
eggplant for me or whatever.
Can I send you the eggplant?
Right. Can I mail it to
I'll
you?
Freeze it. You'll come back.
Right. No, there would be a really kind response that was rooted in chesed. And maybe a deeper practice of chesed would get to that place. Maybe the Sod Nesira can help us. It's this next piece. It's actually from the Zohar. I'll say it outside. By outside, I mean not in this text. Quotes a version of it. Sod Nesira is something called the secret of separation. Was anyone here when we did this at Shalashudas in the Zohar inside the text? Great. So the Zohar, the great mystical text, has this fascinating idea that each of the letters auditions to become the first letter of the Torah. Ultimately, Bet wins, Breishit, but all of the letters except for a few audition. And why do those few not? I don't know. But Tzadi makes its appearance. And the letter Tzadi, who can.
It's a duck.
Trying to draw Tzadi in the air. It can kind of look like two people fused together. And so there's this idea that Adam and Eve were created as one androgynous person facing not each other out. And that the sodness, the secret of separation, is that creation was really about them being able to separate and turn to face each other. There's something mystically significant in that process of human creation. In the Zohar's version of it, the letter Tzadi is split into two letters, Nun a backwards nun and a yud, which stand in that case. Nun and yud? I'll have to look in the Zohar to see what letters it's split into, but the basic idea is that Sati represents being right, or Sodek, and it's hard to be right if you can't see the other person. That's the Zohar's point with the letter Tzadi, and why it's rejected ultimately as the starting letter of the Torah. It stands for being right, for tzedakah. And so it's auditioning to be the start of the Torah as the vibe tzedakah, of righteousness. And God basically says, no, because you're righteous, you know, your two people can't see each other until I separated them with the Sibnasira. So that's an interesting idea. So that's a different mystical statement about this. I think about the poem by Yehuda Amichai. People know this poem? Anyone know this poem?
Possibly.
I can make up the words.
You can make up the words.
Just search the words real quickly so I don't. That.
No matter what you say, we're not going to know. So.
No, but I mean,
maybe we will if we find the poem.
Mkom Sha'anu Tzodkim. That's the. So it's called Me'amakom Bo Anu Tzodkim. It's a very beautiful poem. Maybe we'll read it now. I'll read it. Me'amakom Shebo Anu Tzodkim Lo Yitzmachu La'olam Prachim Ba'aviv. I'll translate. From the place that we're both right. Flowers will never grow in the spring. Amakom shebo anu tzodkim uramus v'kashe mochatzer aval sveikot v'hevot osimat olam l'tachuach k'mo parperet k'mo charish l'chisha tishma b'makom shebo hayo habayit asher nechrav. So the place where we're both right is hard and difficult to plant, but doubt and love make the world like plow the world for planting. My translation is not as poetic as the beautiful Hebrew here. Kamoha parperet. Yeah, there's the butterfly again. Kamo charish, like a plow. And can be heard quietly in the place that the temple was destroyed. So this idea that the temple is destroyed because of So the rabbinic idea that this is based on is because of sinat chinam, baseless hatred. So he's rooting the idea of baseless hatred in this place that, if being right becomes a place of hatred, and the opposite of that is sveikot v'ahevot, doubt and love. So I guess why am I bringing this poem in? He's introducing a notion that in order to do chesed for other people, maybe doubt is a strong word for it, but love requires stepping out of your own certainty about yourself a little bit. One can't be so self-obsessed. This is sort of bringing it back to, I think, what you were saying. It's kind of like a practice or a state of being, right? And you're saying there's a state of being, which is I'm right. I think actually a lot of people are in that state right now, I'm just going to say. I know we're supposed to only speak from our experience, and I know it's an exception to the group, but I think in the world, a lot of people feel really strongly like, I'm right. An example, recently someone wrote a letter to me. I'm on a committee, at the Jewish Alliance, trying to foster an Israel policy that allows for dialogue of diverse groups, at least that's my aim, to have different events. Right, left, middle, otherwise, we'll have to set some boundaries somewhere, but maybe not political boundaries. And so someone said, you don't understand, they wrote a letter. Hopefully they're not listening either. Tolerance is for wusses. I don't want to have a voice. I want to make sure that the people who are wrong shut up. And that was basically the letter they sent me. And like, really the letter. This is a real person with a real profession. This is not a caricatured letter. It's someone people respect. You know, they may as well be a doctor you go to, right? They're an important, significant person. I have a family and all these things. And I know them, and I doubt they would speak to me like that if they were looking me in the eye. That's a separate issue. Maybe it's not. Maybe that's our issue, looking people in the eye. So I'm speaking too much. What's the point? What's the point? Someone. So, it's being right is not.
Okay, we have to step out of ourselves.
We have to step out of ourselves. So that's the submissive route, right? Adam and Chava need to face each other. So at least in a lot of for Revolbi and a lot of his writing, Revolbi is this great Musar teacher. This is the biggest challenge of Chesed. I don't know if people will look at this as this is a question. Is this the biggest challenge of Chesed? Stepping out of our own shoes to really begin to see someone else's experience, which is so hard if you're not in their shoes. The other side of it is Rabbi Nachman says, that, you know, it says you should never judge someone else until you're in their shoes. He says, and since you're never in anyone else's shoes, you should never judge anyone else. That's the great Rabbi Nachman teaching. He said, you know who should? God, because God is in everyone's shoes. Because God is imminent. So that's why God judges on Rosh Hashanah, but you don't. That's what Rabbi Nachman says. So I guess I'm just throwing out there. That's what this final paragraph here is. Is that idea of sudness here, or the idea that facing people is kind of hard, that oftentimes, even though we're interacting with people, right, we're like in one body, we interact with them, but we don't see people really. We see ourselves, and then we project.
I have a story.
Yeah?
I have two friends, so I commute to Boston almost every day, and I have two friends who often commute with me, and we get off the train, and on our walk we always see the same homeless people, like every single day. And I have one friend who stops and gives money and feels great about it, just feels great, feels like they're repairing the world in some way, and then they walk away. And then I have another friend who stops and engages in conversation. And I feel like what you're talking about is like, it is that difference. It's being able to face another human being and seeing them as a human being, not because it makes you a good human being, but because they're another fellow human. And at the end of the day, they might feel better about themselves because they've connected in a meaningful way with another human. Mm. I don't know. Do you think that says it?
No, that's for sure about this.
That's what I was, as you were talking, I was thinking.
Okay, so I could chime in. So as I said, I work at the kosher food pantry. So it's very difficult for people to come in and take food. It's they feel that they might be judged. There's a stigma attached. And my job is to make them not feel like that. And, you know, that, yes, I'm it's my job, but I'm also doing chesed by helping them and smiling at them and making them feel warm and welcome and giving them choices of what they can have and not judging them in any way and just speaking with them as human to human and person to person and not looking down upon them or, you know, any sort of judgment in any manner. And I think it's, you know, treating people respectfully and being smiling at everybody, you know, kind of. So, you know, and people respond differently to me because their needs are different and their reactions are different. But I always try to be very happy and friendly and whatever. And it's just amazing to see the different types of reactions that I get by just exuding warmth. And it's just, so, you know, I kind of do it every day, but it's the same, you know, everybody does it in their own way and what works for them.
For me, one of the ways that this piece resonates with me is that I think, you know, in some ways the place where I can be in the deepest moments of chesed aren't doing something for somebody, but actually trying to figure something out with somebody. Like, that's the bigger challenge, is how to, like, meet somebody and, like, do something together versus, like, gifting or giving or providing a thing for someone who's just in need. That, to me, feels like that is easier, takes less chesed for me than if I'm, like, I mean, up against somebody who's, like, disappointing me or, like, frustrating me, or, and then I have to be like, no, but I actually want to have a relationship with this person. And I have to do that. I can't do that if I don't just try to love them as I'm frustrated with them or whatever's going on.
So before we close, there's a bunch of other sources about chesed in the rest of the packet. This was just sort of the introductory essay. So basically the point here is to open up the discussion a little bit, to begin to sort of take this topic, which is dry, and let it decant, I guess it's a metaphor, aerate and sort of have some aromas for us so that we might begin to think about how it applies in our lives. Everyone's going to be different, right? Is it chesed to yourself that is key, or is it a particular person? Is it cultivating a state of being? Is it receiving chesed? That sort of feels like a bright area that could require some attention in your life. And so there are two things that people should choose to do as part of the VOD generally. I don't know if people have been doing that. And if you haven't, it's okay. I want to encourage, like, absence of, like, some, just because you haven't done a practice for a while doesn't mean you can't start doing one today. And just because you do it tomorrow but not the next day doesn't mean it wasn't worthwhile. So the two are to choose a focus phrase. That would be a phrase you repeat to yourself at a fixed time each day. I also want to say that a couple of people mentioned putting it on their car dashboards, particularly people that commute. Someone else mentioned taking a picture of the phrase and putting it as a phone background or a computer screen background. These are things people in this group did that I've never thought of doing. So I'm just sharing those as ways to get the phrase, someone else put it on their ceiling above where they sleep, and glow in the dark stickers. That's one way to, their spouse did call concerned. I'm a true story. I'm like, why are they putting Hebrew phrases and glow in the dark on this? And they didn't explain what was going on. So if you're that person, it's okay. It's admirable. So the idea for the focus phrase is to say it, maybe to yell it, maybe to pray it, but to, like, have it, put it, you know yourself best, put it in a place where it's going to, like, keep reminding you of its existence. About chesed, could be Olam Chesed Yibana, the world is built from kindness, if that resonates for you. Another one that Revolbi suggests and Ali Shor is Patoach Tiftachet Yadcha, the Torah's command to surely open your hand. Like, you must open your hand as a double repetition of the verb open. That's if you feel like you need the kick in the pants. There could be any other.
Is that the phrase that's on page 88, ki patoach?
It is.
So the first three words of that are?
Yeah, I mean, you could choose any ones that resonate. I think patoach tiftach in particular, you shall surely open et yadcha, your hand. But you could also craft your own, or it could be from a song or poem you like, or.
Isn't that version of that in
Yashrei? I'm sorry?
Isn't that version of that in
Yashrei? Right, there's also God's chesed, poteach et yadcha, God opens up his hands, who must be l'chol chai ratzon, right, and gives to, along those lines, there's also from the daily Psalms in Shacharit Chastecha Hashem Yisadeni, that God, your kindness satisfies me like a meal. It's an analogy of Yisadeni from Sevudah. So my food is your kindness. My meal is your kindness, God. I've used that one personally in this practice and found it beneficial. And then also in addition to a phrase, a Kabbalah, a thing you're going to do, a thing you're going to do. It should be a predictable thing that you can do that will come up, not something that you don't know when it will come up, but something that will come up and predictably. Ideally, like a couple of times a week at least, I would say. That you can do, but daily would be the best, that you can do on a daily basis to reinforce this midah. So I don't know if anyone has any. And it could be something tangible, or it could be something symbolic, like from our Mizrahi and Sephardic brethren, right? When they recite Ashrei in the prayers and get to that verse, Poteach et yadcha, they open their hands, right? So that would be like a symbolic ritual gesture, or it could be something tangible. Could be a self-care moment. Or
interacting with smiling at a cashier in the store.
Smiling is good. That could be another focus phrase. Also, b'sever panim yafot. There's a teaching in Mishnah Abba to greet everyone with sever panim yafot. It's hard to translate what that means, actually. Sever seems to mean from svara, understanding, panim yafot, a pleasantly understanding face is how I think I would translate that. But it's often translated as a smile. But of course, that's not the word for smile.
It really works, too.
Maybe. Smiling might cause your computer to begin to photo
right. you,
which is really disturbing on a lot of levels.
I was talking to Walmart and I was talking like smiling at this person who was checking me out at Walmart, and she looked so miserable, and she felt like we had this conversation there, like she like I felt like I relieved some of her pain for the moment just by talking to her.
I once, as a Kabbalah for this, decided to greet at least one stranger a day, seriously. So, like, to ask someone how they were doing and mean it. But you know when you can mean it or not, like, with a cashier, someone will be like, hi, how are you? And smile and actually ask them, like, how are you? What's going on? And I had all these interesting conversations during that month. So, and try anything that resonates, you could switch it up. And then we're going to resume sometime after the new year. I'm considering doing every other week as opposed to every month. I wonder if that would create more movement that would be better, or if people like the month. I'm hearing some feedback that the month people lose momentum generally from several people. But if you feel like a month is a good space out, great. And if you want this every other week, let me know that too, and I'll...
Every other week or every month?
Every other week.
Can I throw something really bizarre?
Or you were saving less every other month.
Oh, I wasn't sure. I thought you were saying let's go to every other month, but you said every other week, but then you said a month.
Oh, no. I wasn't sure. So I'm putting on the table the possibility of keeping the same format of basically once a month.
Dialing it up.
Or more, not less. More would be like every other week. I don't know what people's time considerations are, or if people like having a material for a month, or if people feel... burdened. So let me know. Everyone will have their own, but let me contact me the way you always do, however that is, and let me know if you have a preference or don't care, and we'll see what the group feels. But we will resume again in the winter I want to encourage everyone to use the Meetup's Resuit in the winter of alacrity. And in general, attends that everything drops through the floor in the winter, something with the snow and the cold really does do something to mood. So actually, Meetup practice in the winter can be, I think, really important. Because the winter is a challenging time for a lot of people. I want to thank everyone for coming tonight for this wonderful discussion. I will send a recording of this discussion out to the group for if people want to reference it. And wish everyone a happy Hanukkah when it comes.
Indeed.